Well, welcome to the Advisor Pact monthly drop-in Q&A session. I'm Mark Little. Your Advisor Pact pledge is a pledge that you make to every client. It's a pact. And it addresses the four client expectations that, frankly, successful affluent clients have, by admission, given up on finding in any financial advisor. And so this program is all about delivering these four promises at a very high level, high enough level that your clients are so impressed that they cannot help but remark about your great services to everybody that they know and love and care about. So it's all about becoming more referable and delivering truly comprehensive financial services at a level that, frankly, no other financial advisor is likely to be able to deliver in your community. So, a financial advisor who is seriously implementing this system has lots of questions for us. That's how we sort of look at the people in this program. We have people that are just kicking the tires. They've joined this program because they want to see what it's about and they're just evaluating things. That's fine. Even those people who are serious about evaluating the program submit lots of questions. And then other advisors who tell us, they admit straight up, you know, they're gunning for this system in terms of implementing as fast as they can. They've made the decision to jump in the river and they want to implement quickly. Either way, we can tell how seriously an advisor is either evaluating or implementing the Advisor Pact model by the number of questions that you submit per week. Now, some contact us in advance of this monthly session, and that's fine. They get their questions answered on the fly, or we get their question and we hold it until this session if it's you know, submitted pretty close proximity to the date. But others hold their questions. And personally, for me, I think this is your greatest opportunity that, you know, we're live, we're here together. And so if you've got questions, you can either submit them as we're going through the questions that we've received, just submit questions of your own, or, and I think this is even better, raise your hand and I'll unmute you when I get to a breaking point. I'll unmute you and we'll just go through whatever issues you've got. And it doesn't have to be questions just simply about the implementation of this system. We know financial advisors who are seriously implementing this system do have a lot of questions about the system. But the one great thing about this session is, as long as you've got me, let's utilize it fully. So if you've got other issues that you're struggling with, often we deal with staff issues. If you've got issues having to deal with your staff, confidential issues, we can coach through them here. If you've got client issues, if you've got issues related to your clients that you're just wanting to bounce an idea off of me, or maybe figure out how, you know, I've dealt with these issues over the years, this is a perfect venue for that. So, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years. We launched this system in 2008. So we've been doing this with advisors for a lot of years, and I am still actively advising clients. So, you know, it's not like we don't deal with the same issues you deal with. I think that's one of the benefits of this program. And with any program that you decide to evaluate or implement, you should only join and decide to pursue programs that are being presented by people who've actually implemented, not people who are describing philosophies in theory on how to run your business or how to, you know, acquire clients or serve clients better. You should only, my opinion, and this was certainly my rule over the years, I only took coaching from and joined programs where the individuals presenting what I was learning had actually successfully implemented what they're teaching. So if you have a question, just submit it. Until then, I'm just going to go through. We got two questions this recently that I thought were good for everybody. And so I made a decision that we're going to cover them first. And so we'll see. If you've got questions to submit, we'll deal with them at the end. Or if you raise your hand, when I get to a breaking point, I'll unmute you and we'll talk. Okay, the first question from an advisor, a member of our system. I'm building my team, which I now have two subject matter experts. Congratulations, by the way. I will tell you just parenthetically that our system, as involved as it is, has some very simple premises. But I will tell you that our system gets tremendously easier once you've built your team. Once you have your five subject matter experts in place, our system becomes as easy as it's going to. And it's just so much more confidence on your part if you have your team in place. But back to the question, I'm building my team, now have two subject matter experts, but just encountered a potential client who does not want to use one of my subject matter experts, my tax subject matter expert. He thinks I'll discount my fees as a result. How would you handle this situation? It's an excellent question. I've certainly dealt with this a lot over the years, and we have had a lot of advisors on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit and elsewhere that we work with that deal with this. You can expect to deal with this. It's basically a misunderstanding of your role in the client's life. And so let's dig right into it. So to answer that question, let's look at the traditional financial services model, what the client's got in their mind versus the advisor pack team structure. So in other words, what the client's thinking that the model is versus what the model actually is. So let's start by looking at the traditional financial services model. So before you came along, clients have financial people in their life. They have somebody probably doing their taxes. They certainly have their money sitting somewhere. They may have a money manager. They may have their money parked at a bank, or they may have it all over the place in various institutions. But we call that money management. They may or may not have a financial planner. Most clients have at some point in their life created wills and trusts, and so they've got an attorney who did that. And every client certainly has insurance agents, if only for their vehicles and their residence, you know, their home and so forth. So all these people exist in their life, or some of these people. So they have financial people in their life before you came along. The question is, who's creating the overarching strategy to align and focus this team? And by the way, to measure success, in other words, how does a client answer the question, am I on track or off track? And that would be from an overarching plan that is measurable. And so that's the big question. And in the traditional financial services model, who does all this? It's the client. Usually nobody on the team is stepping up to do any of this. It's the client who is, if there's an overall strategy, it's the client who manages it. Maybe they hire a financial planner who creates a financial plan, but then they're off. Usually when we meet a client, if they've had a financial plan created, it's kind of laying on the shelf gathering dust, or they're using it, but it's not like the financial planner as a person has stepped up to coordinate and do any of this stuff. So the question is, who are these people talking to each other? So when there are crossover issues, who initiates the communication between these people? So if there's an insurance issue that has a legal consequence, maybe with life insurance or something, who makes sure that the estate planning lawyer is talking to the insurance agent? If there's tax consequences related to money management, then or an investment, let's say there's a thought that they want to sell some investments, or maybe the client needs money to buy something and they've got to sell some investments. So there's tax consequences. Who's the one that initiates the communication between, you know, the money management team or person or structure or function or whatever it is, and the tax accountant before the decision is made? Not that the tax decision overrides the investment decision, but it's just a question of who's coordinating these people and so forth. So you get the idea. Are these people talking? in the traditional financial services model, most of the time, these people are not talking. They're not talking to each other. If they are, it's always the client who's pushing for that and coordinating to make sure that's happening. But generally, even with the most affluent clients, if these people talk, it's that it's the client who acts as intermediary, and usually they don't talk. Usually the accountant tells the client the issues. The client then talks to the money manager and tries to translate, tries to, you know, can, you know, explain what the, so tries to play intermediary. And there's nothing really worse than putting the least qualified person in charge of, you know, conveying the messages back and forth. So the client just gets kind of caught in the middle in these situations. So here are the critical questions. Who's establishing the overall strategy in the traditional financial services model? So who's the one who's stepping up here and creating the overarching strategy? Is it the client? Is it any one of these five people? Who, and secondly, who's providing oversight to ensure that all recommendations are well aligned with that overall strategy or overarching strategy? So one thing that's for sure, if the client has all these people in their life, they are making recommendations to the client. So the tax accountant's giving tax recommendations, the insurance agent's giving insurance recommendations, and so forth. They all have recommendations. The question is, who's checking to see if any of these recommendations are perfectly aligned with the overarching strategy, the big strategy, or not? So if there's a decision to not sell investments because it will create taxes, who's the one that steps up and says, yeah, well, there, if we have a year where there was a decline in the market, let's say hypothetically, maybe this is the year that we should take those taxes because this will be a low tax year. It's like there's an overarching strategy. So then the third question, critical question is, and who's responsible for measuring success against the goals? So if the client's trying, if the client has goals like financial independence or whatever the case, you know, they've got all these goals, then who's the one who steps up and tells the client at every point in time, right now, Mrs. Client, you're on track? Or at this moment in time, Mr. and Mrs. Client, you are currently off track, or you're off track, or you've drifted off track with one of your goals or whatever the situation. And here are the specific recommendations required in order to get back on track. So who's the one stepping up to do that? Well, I can tell you, in most successful and affluent clients, it's the client who thinks they're doing that. But the reality is, in most cases, not every case, but in most cases, it's not really happening. They just kind of have a general sense that they're on track. All right, so that's the traditional financial services model. Now, what's our model? In our model, insert the most trusted advisor. So the client, rather than directly coordinating with all five areas of personal finance, now they have a single simple point of contact. They have a trusted advisor who's pulling all this together, who's making sure that those three critical things are happening. It's the trusted advisor who makes sure that there's an overarching strategy in place. And it's the trusted advisor who makes sure that whenever recommendations are made from anyone in the client's financial life, that the recommendation before it's implemented is assessed and found to be in perfect alignment with the overarching strategy. And so, and it's the trusted advisor that insists and makes sure that when there are issues on the table that require coordination, it's the trusted advisor that will absolutely make sure that all these people are talking to each other. So our structure is quite different. And not to go too far down this path of the work, you know, division of labor, we do recommend, as soon as you can afford it, you have a very strong administrative manager, so that this frees you up to focus more on the clients. So you focus on the clients, you know, you have your two priorities, directly serving clients face-to-face and on the phone, and going out and getting new potential clients. And so you've got those two roles. Your administrative manager is the one who's tasked with making sure that everything that's supposed to get done for client progress meetings actually gets done. So it's the administrative manager that coordinates the team, and you interface with the client. So this is our team structure. Now, the question on the table is, let's say, you know, the client's got some of these people in their life, tax accountant, they have money management, they've got an estate planning attorney, they've got insurance agents. And then you're building a team of your subject matter experts, but the client wants to use one of their, so in their mind, they're thinking, okay, I'm used to the traditional model. There's just one person in each of these roles. And now, you know, I'm hiring you, I'm bringing you in as the most trusted advisor. And I realize you've got a team, but you know, I've got a tax person that I've used for 20 years. I don't want to stop using them. And they kind of think parenthetically as a footnote, and if I'm using my tax person, you should reduce your fee, obviously. Well, this is a misunderstanding of what's happening, all right? So there is a dividing line. You've got the people on the client's side that have been serving them all these years, and then you've got your team. We call the client's team, or the team that actually implements the recommendations, is called the implementation team. And your team is called the oversight team. So the question is, what's the difference? Well, your team, the oversight team, has been tasked with creating an overarching strategy and overseeing that strategy to make, and overseeing the implementation team to make sure that every recommendation that comes out of the mouths of the implementation team, before the client sees the recommendation, it's assessed to make sure that it's in perfect alignment with the overarching strategy. So it's really those two functions, strategy and oversight. That's what the oversight team's job is. Now, in your business model, and I don't want to get too far into this, you may be set up to do some of the implementation yourself. You may do the money management or the investment management. You may do some of the insurance or the legal or the tax or whatever. But let's just, for clean answer to the question that was submitted, let's just assume that, you know, I can tell you, well, let's just assume that you've got an oversight team that is separate from the client's implementation team. And so said a different way, let me just say it this way. If your goal with this program is to become a client-focused model, which is what we recommend, then at some point you'll discover that what the most successful affluent clients want, what appeals to that market, is a separation of the advice from the implementation. And so if your goal is to someday become an oversight team that is separate and has no conflicts of interest, you're not compensated for any of the implementation, you're not compensated for whether or not the client does or doesn't do implement any particular financial products or services, that's the direction the industry is moving, and that's what clients seem to be wanting more and more. So to answer this question, I'm going to assume your oversight team is completely separate and compensated separately from the implementation team, even though you're overseeing them. All right. So here's how the conversation would go potentially, and this is how my conversations like this go typically. Client says, but I don't want to use your CPA. I want to continue using my guy, the tax accountant that I like and have been using for 20 years. To which I say, oh, that's no problem. I'd love for you to continue working with your CPA as long as they're capable and up to the task. And I've seen nothing up to this point to say that they're not really, really good. So shouldn't be a problem. In case you're wondering why I have a tax planning subject matter expert on our team, it's because there usually are large gaps that have not been happening before our arrival, which need to be filled before your team is going to be able to function properly. So to confirm this, let me just ask you a few questions about your CPA. I've got three basic questions. And you just tell me how it's been in the past. So first, how often has your CPA created an overarching strategy against which you can measure whether or not you're on track to your goals at any given time. And of course, a client can say whatever is the case, but most often the answer is they don't. I don't get that from my CPA. My CPA does taxes. My CPA doesn't do any of this kind of a financial plan or tax plan or anything like that. So, you know, but they may take a stab at saying, yeah, no, I always know I'm on track. My CPA is really experienced. I know they're doing a great job. But when you dig into it and say, okay, so show me the strategy. Let me see in the past how they've created something against whether you can measure that you're on track or not, and whether you're making the best financial decisions or not. I mean, there will always be some kind of a document that's going to show that you're on track or off track, or you're making better, you know, smart choices about your money and so forth. At the end of the day, most clients will say this is not something that my CPA has done in the past. Secondly, in the past, when your CPA made recommendations to you, how did you know whether his recommendations were well aligned with your overarching strategy or not? And this becomes kind of an obvious no-brainer if they will acknowledge that there has not been any kind of a documented overarching or overall strategy created in the past. Then obviously there's not anything against which, when recommendations are made, we can compare to make sure that that the recommendations are well aligned with the strategy. So that's usually, you know, it hasn't been happening. It's a gap. And then third, how often does your CPA let you know that you're on track for all your goals, or that you've drifted off track, which inevitably happens from time to time, and then provided you with specific recommendations required to get back on track? So again, this almost never happens. With most successful affluent people, this is not happening. And if they say it is happening, then you can just honestly say, great, that was not in the documents that we reviewed up to this point. Let's pull them out and look at them. But the bottom line is, it's almost never happening. So then where do you go from here? That's basically where you make the point to your client that you just tell them what the reality is in their life. You tell them your CPA is a skilled tactician, and let's just face it, who's not a strategist? They may be able to create strategies, and they may be telling you, whispering in your ear, well, I can do all that stuff that you're hiring this guy to do. I can do all of that. The question on the table is, in the last 20 years, if you could do it, you're telling me you could do that and you haven't created a strategy for me, or even suggested that it needs to be done? With all due respect, you may be able to do it, but if you could have done it, I think you would have brought it to my attention sometime over the last 20 years. So your CPA is a skilled tactician. Our tax planning subject matter expert is a strategist who's going to create a strategy and who's skilled at overseeing tacticians. And that's the difference. That's why you need our team. So our tax planning subject matter expert is going to coordinate with your CPA in order to perform the two critical functions that have been missing in your financial life all these years. And that is somebody to create a strategy and somebody to provide oversight to make sure that recommendations being made kind of across all of your financial people, that the decisions made whether to or to not implement any recommendation from one of your financial people, that there is some oversight to make sure that everything's perfectly aligned. So that's the answer. That's the answer that we have always provided. It's always just a misunderstanding of this simple issue of the implementation team versus the oversight team. And they've just never thought of it. That's something that they've never realized. Most even successful affluent people have not, it may have bothered them kind of down deep once you bring the issues up, the pertinent questions that you're going through with them, the logic, but it may have bothered them at a subconscious level, but most affluent people have never really thought about the fact that they've got an implementation team. And now the big service that you're providing is that you're providing an oversight team, and you're providing a method of creating a strategy and creating oversight. Let's see. We had a question come in over the transom. Let's just go dark here for a minute. Let me read it. When an ideal client hires me to go forward with their plan, should we get at that meeting a release from the client so that their existing subject matter experts will speak with me and release any other documents that I may need? Absolutely. Matter of fact, on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, we do have kind of a general form. It's a hold harmless agreement, which I'm sure you've seen. I have to always give the warning that on any kind of a document like this, Tim, you really should have an attorney in your hip pocket, a transaction attorney that you can contact kind of at the anytime something like this question comes up, and that they can whip out for you in, you know, nothing flat, certainly an hour of their time or less, however they bill. And, you know, you need an attorney like that. But this is such a common agreement, and it's just basically saying it's something that you can send. Let's say you have a new client and you get all the client's implementation team. So you get their contact information from the client for the tax accountant, the money manager, you know, all the people that we were, you know, talking about in the structure here. So you get all their contact information, and now you're trying to figure out how do we reach out to these people, and kind of, you know, the client hasn't alerted them necessarily. So how do we manage this? Well, the outreach is always better if you can email, or if they're really old professionals, you fax to them this form that you're describing, which basically is from the client. We always suggest that you have the client handwrite a little cover letter that you can scan and provide with this document that you're requesting, and where the client says, "Please talk to Tim as though it were me. You know, please give him access to whatever he needs. He's providing an overarching strategy, and I've asked him to do it, and I've told him that you'll give him whatever he needs in whatever area it is, let's say tax." So what I'll do, I wasn't going to do it, but I'll make a note right now that when the replay of today's session goes live, I will also include that document. So when and usually this goes live within 24 hours or so. So just go back to the advisorpact.com website. And when this replay for today's session goes live, Tim, I'll make sure that that hold harmless agreement, this form that you're describing, the one that we provide on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, I'll make that a downloadable. So, very good. All right. So, let's just keep moving here. The next question that we received that I thought would be interesting to cover today was this one. I thought it's benefit to everybody. I've never had team members before. This is from a trusted advisor, a member of the Advisor Pact monthly program. Now that I have an administrative manager and one subject matter expert, they're asking me questions. And I wondered how you would respond. One question is, what led me to want to implement the Advisor Pact method? So how would you respond to that? Well, this goes to a kind of a leadership premise that we have about four financial advisors, you know, that we have had for years and we teach over in the toolkit. I've always said it over on in our flagship program, which I only mention because we interact with those advisors more directly over there. But the thing I've always told those advisors in that program is that the role of trusted advisor is more of a leadership skill than it is any other, certainly any financial skill or anything like that. That when you look at what your job is to, you know, actualize their financial hopes and dreams, and your job is to, you know, have client progress meetings at least once every four months, where the goal of every meeting is for the client to leave each meeting with an overwhelming sense that they are making forward progress. And along the way, your objective is with you and your team to exceed the client's expectations. So there's this whole relationship development period where you've got to first establish what are their expectations, and then you and your team have to work to exceed those expectations. And, you know, anyway, without getting too much further into that, it becomes a leadership position for you. You begin to delegate all of the implementation of the services, in other words, all the financial stuff that happens in a client's life, all the money management, financial planning, estate planning, insurance, tax, all that stuff's done by either people on your team or the implementation team that are working with the client that they've had from the past. So with your team overseeing them. The point is the trusted advisor over time gets out of doing any of that, and your job becomes purely a leadership position. And in leadership, one of the keys to leadership is that you'll learn and you know intuitively is you can only implement what you can skillfully explain. So this is how we describe it in the toolkit. We make a very fine point on the idea that you've got all these concepts that you're implementing in the advisor pact methodology. And there's some pretty high level concepts that as a leader, you have to convey to every single member of your team. And what I have taught over in the toolkit for years is that if a trusted advisor, if you become skilled at explaining just four of these important concepts, as leader of the team, if you were to just become skilled at just four of the major premises that your team needs to grasp, it would be these four, okay? We call these the four most important leadership conversations. The first one is the one that you're talking about. And it is for you as a leader to be able to, you know, clearly, articulately describe why this team structure, what we're doing and what we're building and what we're doing, this whole advisor-packed business model is superior. That it is something that clients can't find elsewhere. And for clients who want this type of service, this level of service, we're the only game in town. So this is a leadership conversation that you need to master. And the other three are everyone on our team contributes to the team goal. And so in some of the modules that you receive, we talk about the team goal and we lay out the team goal and we encourage you to establish the team goal. So I won't go through it here, but most financial advisors don't have a goal for their team. Most financial advisors don't have a team, really, not one that functions as a team for every client. But even advisors that do have a team, most financial advisors do not have a team goal. In other words, something that the team can focus on and say, you know, we're out to accomplish this goal. So the second conversation as a leader that if you've established a team goal the way we recommend, then the conversation that you need to make clear to every team member before you invite them or allow them onto your team is you need to make the point in a very concise and compelling way that you only invite people onto your team if they can contribute to the team and are willing to and embrace the team goal. And so it's this conversation that we call everyone on our team contributes to the team goal. The third leadership conversation is it's one of the modules that you'll receive. It's one of the first 12 modules that you'll receive. And it's called the initial team exercises for improving the client experience. So there are four of them. And then the other conversation that you need to master are the 17 items required during a subject matter expert's first 30 days on the team. So I'm going to spend the rest of today just going through this with you. But those are the four. So if you just mastered four leadership conversations, these would be the four. And by the way, before I get into them, you would think, let me tell you, this is the thing that really surprised me the most as a leader over the years early on. It's you would think when you have this conversation in a very clear and compelling way with a single team member, I always used to think it's one and done. You know, it's one time you go through this conversation with each team member and you're done. And so once you've gone through each of these four conversations with a subject matter expert, it's done and you don't need to have these conversations ever again. That is not true. The reason you need to master these four is the most surprising thing about even an effective team is how often you have to have these conversations. You have got to master these because, sadly, you have to have this conversation with every team member more than once, I predict. So let's get to it. I want to, I'm going to switch over here to a document that is actually provided on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit to the Trusted Advisors. And I'm going to, again, on the replay page for today's session, check back in a day or so. And what I'm putting up on the screen, you'll be able to download. So this is let me check and see how many pages this is. This is a 10 or 11 page document. And the format of this is that it goes through these four conversations in an outline format so that you as a leader of your team can learn each of these conversations. And I recommend you just pick one at a time and master it. So if this is your question right now, this one about why our team structure is superior and why we're doing things the advisor packed way and so forth, then just focus on this conversation and master this one. And then once you're done with that, master, you know, pick another one. Maybe you've got somebody else on the team that needs another one of these four conversations. Just pick it and master it. Now, the format of this document is with each of these outlines of these four conversations, you get two things. You get a basic outline and a full outline. So I'm going to go through the full outline with you, but your goal is in mastering this, being able to have this conversation, is to practice the full outline. And I recommend literally practicing it with someone, practicing it with your assistant, practicing it with your spouse or someone or a friend or somebody that you care about that cares about your business. Just say, hey, I'd like to practice a conversation that I'm going to be having with my staff over and over and over, and do it with somebody so that you've got a person that you can kind of practice out loud with. But the point of the format, and this is the way we teach it over in the toolkit, is utilize the full outline to learn it and to practice it. But your goal is, you know, when you can stop practicing, when you've gotten off the full outline and you're now able to have this conversation in a really compelling way using just the basic outline in front of you. And then when you actually go into these meetings with a team member, we recommend that you just copy this basic outline, have it on a piece of paper in front of you as if that's the agenda, and that's all you've got in front of you is the basic outline, because you've spent enough time with the full outline that you can have this conversation just with these kind of agenda points for you, and then that's enough to trigger you on to the next topic. Now, the reason I want you to look at the basic outline here of this conversation is the way that you're going to describe to your team why this structure, the advisor pack structure, is superior are some of the things that we've just talked about. It's because we provide a strategy for clients and they haven't typically had anyone doing that before. And we provide oversight to over our clients' financial affairs, and that has typically never happened before. And then we have the PACT acronym, Protection, Attention, Coordination, and Transparency. So we explain to our team member, you know, these are the four client expectations. These are the four things that data shows that affluent clients claim that they have a hard time, or most affluent people claim they cannot find an advisor to do any of these. They can't find an advisor anywhere at any price to do these four things. And so you kind of walk through that with your team. And then the bottom line is, and by accomplishing these six things, you know, for a client who's looking for strategy, oversight, someone to protect their assets and their strategy and pay close attention to whether they're on track or off track, and to coordinate all the financial people in their life and to provide full transparency, you know, if that's what a client is actually seeking, or in the back of their mind have thought to themselves, if I ever come across an advisor who can actually do all this stuff, you know, I would pay more. Then in that scenario, we're the only game in town. So that is that conversation, basically. So that's the conversation. That's the question that you just asked. So when you have a team member saying, by the way, why are you using the Advisor Pact model over whatever other models you've used in the past, or something that your team member thinks might be a better model, this is how you describe it. And the full outline, actually, if you go through this, I'm not going to go through it because we just walked through it and we've spent most of today's session describing it. But the full outline allows you to, it for each of these sections that we just discussed, it gives you all the relevant bullet points to drive what in essence is a compelling conversation with someone on your team. So let's say you have a new subject matter expert who doesn't understand how you operate or why you operate the way that you do, why this model, this outline, this full outline gives you a starting place. This is the conversation to master in order to have that that conversation with a new team member, or any team member that's kind of lost sight or focus on what we're doing. Okay, I'm going to run through the other three major leadership conversations that you need to master. And by the way, as you download this document, it's a Word document with these outlines, there will be references to the Trusted Advisor Toolkit in here, because I'm literally giving you something that we provide over on our other program. So just ignore any reference to the toolkit. So like here where it's saying, as Trusted Advisor, I'm responsible for explaining and monitoring the team goal in step 10 and 12 of the deliverables team recruitment process. That is relevant in the program you're in the Advisor Pack Monthly program. When you get the module for filling subject matter expert vacancies, the team goal is still step 10 of 12. It's the deal structure meeting. It's when you've selected a single subject matter expert from all the candidates to make an offer to join your team. It's in that meeting where you describe the team goal, have this conversation. But where it says things like the location on the toolkit for finding that, just ignore all that. I'm going to put this document in the Advisor Pack Monthly program on the replay page for this session, but literally just ignore any references to the toolkit. All right, so when you're talking about the team goal, you know, the high level is you're going to, whoops, sorry, jumping around too much here. Okay, so the basic outline is, you know, you make 4 points to every team member in the deal structure meeting when they come on board. Every deliverables team member has to fully understand the team goal before they join the team. Once they're on the team, every deliverables team member fully embraces the team goal, or else we don't invite them onto the team. And then after they've been on the team, then we have to, I'm focused on making sure that every deliverables team member is contributing to the team goal. You know, once you're on the team, I want to make sure and understand that I want to see that every team member is actually contributing to the goal. So that's the conversation. And then at all times, me and my administrative manager are always looking for evidence that a subject matter expert is capable of exceeding the ideal client's expectations. Because that's the other thing that you'll discover when you work with subject matter experts, is that even subject matter experts that you bring onto your team that have extraordinary reputations in the community, there are a high percentage of subject matter experts who are really technically great at what they do, you know, great tax accountants or great, you know, estate planning lawyers, whatever. They're good at what they do, but they are not capable of exceeding an ideal client's expectations. They've never thought about it. They don't know how to do it. And the way we measure it is referrals. So this will always show up with a subject matter expert when you're recruiting. This will always show up in the form of, you know, you'll ask them, do you have any clients that meet my ideal client profile? And if so, how many referrals have you gotten in the last year from that group? You know, or it's a rate, like how many client referrals from your ideal clients, Mr. Mrs. Subject matter expert, have you received over the last 12 months per ideal client? So it's a rate. Anyway, the point is, if you have that conversation, you'll be surprised to learn that many very well-respected subject matter experts, frankly, it's a skill gap. They don't know whether they are or whether they aren't exceeding client expectations. And it's important, because you don't want anybody on your team that doesn't know how to do this. Or if they don't know how to do it, and this is more commonly the case, certainly has been in my experience, they're a little bit embarrassed. In other words, they don't have any evidence to show you before you invite them onto the team that they are exceeding their client's expectations. They don't have any, they don't measure it. They don't never thought about it. And they realize very quickly that because they can't provide you with any evidence of that, it's a gap. It's a skill gap for what you're looking for. And for me, I always was okay with that if they were like best in class, you know, if they're highly competent, like really good at what they do, and they've got enough of a support team that I know that they'll serve my clients at least day-to-day support adequately. In other words, I don't ever accept a subject matter expert unless they have at least two administrative support people working for them. But the point is, if all that's in place, I will still invite them onto the team kind of on an interim basis. As long as they're willing to admit that this is a skill gap and they're willing to work with you to fill that gap. And you'll see in a minute that is, we have a, that's another one of these conversations to master, is to go through that process with a subject matter expert who is trying to build this skill of exceeding clients' expectations. We'll cover that in a minute. But anyway, that's the 4-point basic outline of describing the team goal. Do they understand it? Do they embrace it? And then after they're on the team, are they contributing? And then, you know, what evidence is there that they're capable of exceeding a client's expectations? And you're looking for, when you come across evidence, you congratulate them. So when you have your performance reviews, we call those subject matter expert expectations conversations. When you have those conversations with subject matter experts down the road, if you're looking for evidence, you'll make note of it. And then when you have these little expectations conversations two or three times a year, we recommend three times a year, then you congratulate them. You praise them on the evidence that you've come across that your clients' expectations have been exceeded because of their work. And so that's this conversation. And just to master this conversation, once you look at this sheet again, you'll look at the full outline and you'll master it. Just use the full outline to practice this conversation until you can have this conversation confidently with a practice partner with only the basic outline in front of you, so that you're not having to, keep looking at the full outline. Okay. Kind of working on the downhill. I'm trying to get done here by the top of the hour. So the next leadership conversation for you to master is this one that we call the initial team exercises for improving the client experience. Okay. So the basic outline is this, and I'll go through the basic outline and that's all we'll do. And then you can use the full outline to see there are some things that I'm not mentioning here in the interest of time. But that's the point. Like when you master this conversation, you'll be able to do like I can do. You can just use the basic outline. And if you've got 10 minutes with a subject matter expert, you'll be able to have this conversation in 10 minutes. If you have 30 minutes or an hour where this is the issue that now you've got to have this conversation again, kind of refocus them or get them moving in this direction again, you know, it's easy for a subject matter expert just to provide the services they're used to providing at a very high level and to kind of forget this whole thing about exceeding client expectations. And so, but from your perspective, what you're trying to do is create an extraordinary client experience for your client. And that means having every one of your subject matter experts focusing at all times on improving the experience and more specifically for the subject matter experts, just working at every client progress meeting to exceed that client's expectations. So it comes down to a granular level where you're focusing one client on at a time. How can I exceed that client's expectations? What can I do to just pleasantly surprise or impress them at this meeting? And that's where subject matter experts are animated because they can think in those terms. They can think for this meeting with this particular client that's coming up a month from now, you know, here are some things that I think would impress them. Here are some things that are, you know, should exceed their expectations. So you kind of play around with it. But this conversation is basically the initial team exercises, and there are four of them that you go through. So what are these four initial team exercises? Why are they important? What's the goal for each of these four exercises? And what actions are we taking to get closer to the goal? So we have a team goal. And so how are we measuring progress towards a team goal? Well, I'm going to go down to the full outline just to go through the first part of it so that you can understand what these four exercises are. And by the way, this is an entire module. So we have an entire module which lay out in detail, including you know, sheets that you can use to manage these exercises with your team and so forth, that lay out each of these four initial team exercises in great detail. But what we're talking about here is just the conversation, the compelling conversation you have with your subject matter expert when you need to ask them for evidence before they join the team as to whether they are exceeding their clients' expectations or not. And if they are, great. And if they're not, then your lifeline to them is to say, well, then a condition of joining our team is that you're willing to go through the initial four team exercises, which are focused specifically on exceeding client expectations. And we will use these four exercises and cycle through them every year over time, year after year, to continually improve our client experience until we are exceeding our client's expectations in the greatest way we can figure out how to do. All right, so what's team exercise number one? Team exercise number one, you'll explain, is how do we currently exceed our client's expectations? So you sit down, it's a process in team exercise one, and you'll go through this with every team member when they first join your team. You know, what is it that you currently do that exceeds your client's expectations? Let's document them. Let's make sure that we have checkpoints for those. If there are things that you're currently doing or that I'm currently doing that we know clients have given us feedback that it exceeds their expectations, they're really happy with that thing that we do, whatever it is, then let's list them all. So you do that with a new team member, and then you continue doing it over time. You just document continually, year after year, you go through this exercise, you redo this exercise one. Whenever you discover something new that exceeds your client's expectations, then you, in essence, come up with a process for consistency to fold it in and begin delivering it either to all your clients or to a subset of your clients that exceeds their expectations. So that's team exercise number one. What are we currently doing that exceeds clients' expectations? Exercise number two is, let's brainstorm some other things. Let's come up with some new ideas, some inventive things. Let's brainstorm and try to figure out, since we've got to figure this out, let's experiment with some things we think might improve a client's experience. And just without getting into it, because it's in the module describing this in detail, your greatest resource for this is your existing clients. Like we recommend in this program that you record every client progress meeting and go back and listen to it. And if you'll listen to the client's comments and listen for things that maybe you missed during the meeting, or listen to those recordings, listening to the recording deeper than you did in the meeting, you'll find there are the clients constantly giving you clues about things that they don't know or don't have that they would love to have, clues to things that could exceed their expectations. And then exercise number three is to create a plan. So once you've got some ideas for new ways, taking some clues on things that you could do to experiment with to improve the client experience and exceed client expectations, then you've got to create a plan to maybe test it on a handful of clients, or somehow you've got to create a game plan for, not doing everything at once, but whatever you're able to do with your current team now, you've got to create a plan for introducing those ideas and experimenting with them and then implementing them formally if they work. And then exercise number four is assessing progress, just measuring success. It's going through and saying, is it working? And the way you measure success, and when you get to this module, it's the whole module's about this basically, it's referrals. The best and most direct and easiest way to measure whether your clients are impressed or not is your referral rate. And if your clients are impressed, your referral rate will be increasing, and your client referral rate. And if your clients are not impressed, then your client referral rate will stay the same or decline. So that's how you assess whether these experiments are working or not. And again, you just have to have the conversation with your team member to remind them that we've got this four-step process that we continually go through year after year, because the goal is to continue improving the client experience and exceeding the client's expectations until we start seeing our client referral rate increasing consistently, like it's always going up. Okay, so that's all I want to go through on that, and we're 1 minute over time, so let me just go to the last one here, and this is the first 30 days of a subject matter expert. And it's these things get done in the first week. These things get done in the subject matter expert's second week on our team. Here are the things and conversation that you do with a client, subject matter expert in the third week that they're on your team. And then here are the things that you do in the fourth week on our team. So what is this conversation? This is a conversation that you need to have during the deal structure meeting. So when you have a finalist, a candidate to join your team, in our process, the name of that meeting is the deal structure meeting. This is where you make the invitation to a subject matter expert to join your team. Same meeting where you lay out the team goal. And it's this conversation is the one that you need to master, and that's why you'll be giving it over and over and over. Every time you add a new team member, you need to have this conversation. So that's why you have to master it. And it's to run through the first 30 days all in one conversation. And if you look at the full outline, it's it goes through everything like week one. It goes through everything in detail, things that you do each week, week by week. So I'm just saying those are the four conversations to master And they are. Here's why our team structure, the advisor pack model, is better than anything else and makes us the only game in town. Number two, everyone on our team contributes to the team goal. That conversation you'll have more than once with each subject matter expert. Number three, the initial team exercises for improving the client experience. This is how you explain that you're going to move a subject matter expert who's otherwise technically superior, but maybe a little bit weak on, you know, being able to provide evidence that they actually can exceed client expectations. So you need to be able to explain the team exercises that they have to agree in advance to participate with to fill that gap. And fourth, you know, the 17 items required during a subject matter expert's first 30 days on the team. You need to be able to master when you're bringing on board a new subject matter expert. Once you're about to issue the invitation, you need to run through this conversation. In the first 30 days, we need to accomplish all of these things. And if they say fine, then great. Make the invite to join your team. If they look at these things that need to get done in the first 30 days and they explode, like, I can't do all that stuff, then you know, you get to revisit whether you want them on the team or if you want to make an exception and make it 45 days. Let me tell you, our experience is all of those 17 things can get done in the first 30 days as long as your team supports them in kind of following up and nudging them through this process. And if they, on the other hand, have a great attitude and want to be on your team because they see this as an opportunity for them, most subject matter experts, just so you know, and this will be my parting shot for today, one of the reasons high-end subject matter experts enjoy joining this team of yours is to fill that gap once they realize that there is such precious little evidence that they are actually impressing their current clients. Once they realize that you've got a process to build that skill and to fill that skill gap on their part, I don't care if they've been doing what they've been doing for 30 years. The ability to master that new skill is something that they can take as a skill back to their firm and make millions of dollars. I mean, this is a skill that's profitable for them, whether or not they just work with your team or they have their own clients. So this is a valuable skill. And so one of the big motivations for joining your team is their excitement about the idea of learning how to exceed clients' expectations to the point that we're measuring to make sure that client referrals increase, which that's the goose that laid the golden egg. Once you're exceeding enough of your client's expectations that your client referral rate is providing enough new potential clients for you to grow your business so that you're on track to your goal for growth for your business, then that's the goose that laid the golden egg. You now have a business structure where you don't have to go out and find new clients all the time, that the clients are so thrilled with the value that you're providing them. They're your marketing department. They go out and they, in the course of their normal day, they bring you up to other people because they're just telling the stories of, here's what my advisor does for me, or you won't believe what my advisor just did for me. Anyway, that's it. So that's it for this month's Advisor Pack Monthly session. I encourage you to submit questions. We know you're implementing seriously if we receive a lot of questions from you in the intervening month. And always come prepared. So when you show up at these live sessions, come prepared with questions. Or if you've got an issue that you want to be coached on and you want to work through it with me, just raise your hand. I'll unmute you. We'll go through it live and we'll discuss whatever issue you want to talk about. So that's it for this session. Until next month, we wish you all the best in implementing. I'm Mark Little.